accession number 24925, reel 6.
Continue on, sorry. Dick and I left Cairo, were posted to India, and we had to go to land at a place called Akir, and then spent the night there, and then Habania, which is the airport of Baghdad. I think it's about 20 miles, about 20 miles southwest of Baghdad. And we spent a couple of days there, I don't know why. I was still having trouble with the oil tank. It was the same aircraft I flew from England to Cairo I was taking out to India. And then from Cairo, we went to Bahrain. From Habania to Bahrain. And I remember they'd been fiddling around with the undercarriage there, Habania. And I came to Bahrain, and I had a red light, which indicated the undercarriage wasn't locked down. So I did all the things that I should have done, and pumped the hydraulics tight and landed anyhow, and quickly got out and put in the undercarriage locks, and it didn't collapse, much to my relief. And they found out at Habania, the RAF station there, that there'd been some mix-up in the Habania. Anyhow, Bahrain was most interesting, an island. We left the airport on this island and went over a long causeway to the city. I don't know if you call it a city, a town. And it was completely different, little white cubicles of rooms that we lived in. When I say lived in, I only spent the night there. And then they said, well, off you go. You have to go to, we want you to go to Sharjah. And we want you to drop in a bag of onions to Sharjah. They're running short of onions, so we did this, Dick and I did this, and I was rather surprised at Sharjah, which was about, from memory, I'd guess the place we landed would be about 10 or might have been 15 miles, a bit more, south of the Persian Gulf. And the runway was in front of a thing that looked like a Bojest fort. The gun holes, and it was straight out of the movies, this square fort with a runway to the south of the fort. The runway was running east-west. And we landed and delivered the bag of onions. We had lunch there in this fort and proceeded on the same day. And we were supposed to go from there to Bombay. And you cross a few mountains there, and I think there was some cloud of some sort, so I decided, I enjoyed low flying, to low fly all around the mouth of the Persian Gulf and along the coast of Balochistan, where I can remember the mountains being red and dark and barren, and I thought to myself, now this is what hell would look like. Anyhow, we crossed the coast at Bombay and fired off the colours of the day, which there was no answer at all. We just crossed the coast and went to Bombay and had a few days there.
What was Bombay like?
Well, I didn't see much of it. All I saw was the transit camp at Bombay, and we had to line up the guns. We had to sight the guns, get the guns in order, and swing the compass, which we did. You put the aircraft jacked up at the back to bring it in the flying position. Then you sighted, the guns were sighted on a target and they were lined up to be accurate. And we didn't know what was going to happen then, and we're virtually on ferry command, right? And I wasn't happy about being on ferry command.
What do you mean by swinging the compass?
Oh, well, the swinging the compass, you have to, they used to call it boxing the compass. You see, the compass is influenced by the metal surrounding it in the aircraft, the deviation, and it's also influenced by the variation, which is the magnetic field of the Earth. So depending where various metal parts are on the gun, on the aircraft, you could be 45 degrees out. So you have to adjust for that on true west or north. Then you can plot a curve as to which direction to fly when you want to go on a certain course. It's all part of a bit of navigation that we learn. And I had to take Dick and I had to take this Beaufighter to Allahabad. We landed at Bhopal, which is about halfway, and had lunch there, I think, and then landed at Allahabad. And I can remember stopping the aircraft and a lot of flame came out of the exhaust after the aircraft had stopped. And I thought, fancy bringing it this far, the same old aircraft, same new aircraft, and to have it burn on me at Allahabad. So I whipped up and got the fire extinguisher and put out the flames. It wasn't too dramatic. And then we had about half an hour at Allahabad, then had to fly the plane over to Fafamo, which is really across the river. And Fafamo was the name of an airport or airfield, really, where this squadron, 177, was forming. And we arrived at this Fafamo, and I said to Dick, this doesn't look like a bad squadron. It's a new squadron starting out. And no one knew what was happening at all. We arrived on 177 squadron on the, I think, the 27th of May. I said to Dick, this will do. Let's join this squadron. And as I say, it was complete chaos. There was no CO there, there was just a group of people. I said to the fellow there, the adjutant, I said, well, I'm being posted here. And he said, oh, put your stuff down here and or just accept it. So Dick and I thought, this will do. So we stayed there. And eventually, when the CO turned up about a week later, a fellow called Baldwin, Philip Baldwin, wing commander, and he said, look, there's 18 crew over strength. And how fortunately I was one of the ones that was kept on, so I was very happy about that. I remember having a 21st birthday in Fafamo, and I thought I must do something to make it memorable. So I remember drinking a bottle of Carew's gin, and I drank the whole lot, and I had very great difficulty in walking back over a ploughed field to my bed, called the charpoy. Anyhow, I made it, so it was a memorable day. And then having been at Fafamo for quite a while. I don't know how. I think we must have been at Fafmo for about a month or two. And the squadron was posted to a place called Fenny, which is about 60 miles north of Chittagong. And I wasn't one of the lucky ones to fly the aircraft to Fenny. We had to go, most of the squadron had to go by train to Chittagong and across the Brahmaputra River. And that, traveling by train in India was quite an experience. It was thousands of beggars, and you'd, people would bring their dead to the station. And you'd be dead bodies lying all over every station. Amazing.
Any, sort of the world of contrasts that you were experiencing.
Yes, absolute contrast.
Did you understand what was going on generally in the war, how the war was going?
Well, we listened to the BBC and we knew what was happening. Yes, but we realised that you had to go where you're told to go. Now, there wasn't any choice. We were in India and we were going to be sent to fight the Japanese. And we didn't realise the Brits had been knocked back in every sphere in the Middle, in the Far East. The Japs going up through Burma, and of course Singapore was a complete failure. And the feeling in India was India would be invaded. Then they were always called a group of people known as the Gandhiwalas. The Gandhiwalas wanted, we understood, to kick the British out and take over India. And of course, we heard that in the army, a lot of the Indian army soldiers transferred to the Japanese army, moved over. They were told that they were going to, if they joined the Japanese army, they'd do well and become big time in the new India. So there were this feeling of Gandhiwalas all the time.
The way that the Japanese have been so successful.
Yeah.
To what degree did you feel that you might be actually fighting and losing?
Well, somehow or other, we never thought of that. I never for a moment thought that we'd lose the war.
Why not?
I don't know. I just thought, we'll clean this lot up. I thought it might take a time, but no, I don't think anyone ever... I never talked to anyone who said that they're going to lose the war. We're going to lose the war. The feeling, as an Australian, was that amongst a lot of Australians, we knew that Australia was likely to be invaded, that we had that feeling all the time. And we're probably happier to be closer to Australia than we were somewhere else. So we felt that fighting the Japanese would be, in a way, helping Australia.
Well, to what degree were you able to keep contact with Australia?
I used to get letters about once a week. So they'd come in batches. You'd get a half a dozen at one time, then nothing for about a month. The letters were very important. remember getting letters from her mother.
What were some of the things she was able to tell you? I mean, presumably she wasn't able to tell you very much.
Oh, she just talked about her daily life and what she was doing. You see, her three children, myself included, had all, they weren't in Western Australia. And she didn't, she had nothing to do, really, when I say nothing to do. She was a very busy person, and she volunteered to have a lot of kids who had come down from Malaysia during the war, or just prior to, or just not prior to, but during the war. And this Reverend Father Canon John Bell was looking after them. He had been made guardian. And he had no one to look after them, really. He was single. And I think the mother went to live at the rectory and look after all these kids. And she used to talk about the daily life, what happened and who was going where and what he had heard of these fellas who she was looking after. They all joined up. As I say, John Bell was a pacifist, as a military medalled man in the 1418 war, violently against war. But all his charges joined the Air Force, or Army or Navy. And so those are the things that we heard about. The daily life of what was going on in Perth. It was very satisfying to hear.
But the fact that there had been, obviously, the Pacific area involved in places like Kokoda Track, Singapore. What had you heard about those experiences?
Well, virtually nothing. Oh, of course, Singapore had fallen before I left Australia, but I heard nothing about the Kokoda Trail. Nothing much at all.
The Americans in Australia, did that concern you?
No, not really. I think that I'd have liked to have been there, but I thought the Americans were... I think there's always some sort of a feeling between countries. I think the British and I, as an England, the men weren't happy about the Americans being there. I don't suppose they're particularly happy about the Australians being there either. But you get a bit of that sort of thing. It didn't worry me. But
have you heard anything about things like, obviously, the Japanese wanting Burma, the Burma Railway, things like that?
No,
about that.
Oh, I remember hearing something about the Burma Rail. Because this friend of mine, Rob Cameron's brother, he knew, was a prisoner of the Japanese, and he was working on the Burma Rail. And I remember one stage Rob had to go and shoot up the Burma Rail, and he was a bit worried he might hit his brother. But and of course the weather in India can be pretty severe. The place we were at went from Chittagong to Feni, which is about 60 miles north, as I say. And the average rainfall there is about 400 inches a year. And it only rains about 3 months of the year. And there's the wettest place on earth is a place called Cherrapunji, which is about 100 miles, or might be a bit more, north of Feni. And it had a rainfall once of 64 feet, and it only rains for 3 months of the year. So you can see there's an awful lot of water comes down. And flying through the... And of course, we were always told that the tops of the cumulonimbus clouds would be 35, 36,000 feet. Now, that's where the stratosphere began, and there's nothing up in it. But of course, I found later that they've tracked clouds up to over 105, 106,000 feet. And they just keep on going up and up and up. And I remember hearing a story about 16 Spitfires flying in this area we were going to fly in. And they went into a cloud, and four were never seen again. Four people bailed out, and anyhow, out of the 16, only four got back. They just ripped to bits by this thunderstorm.
Have you had any experiences in relation to difficult weather in flying?
Oh, yes, in England, in England you have low cloud, possibly fog, tending towards fog, and you can get pretty severe weather in England. But the amount of rain that you experienced in India when it rained was really something I'd never seen before. It was just, it would come down in buckets. And I remember flying behind Philip Baldwin, our CO. I was his number two. And we were flying at about 100 feet over Burma. And I saw a sheet of water come off this bowfighter's wings about 30 feet behind the aircraft. And it looked like a solid sheet of water coming off. It amazed me. And, you know, I lost him at that stage because he just, you know, the weather was, the water was, the visibility was bad. So I left, or I didn't leave him. I couldn't find him. So he went his way on the trip and I went mine. But I suppose we're getting down to the interesting thing of the of being on 177 Squadron, which really was a turning point in my life, being on this squadron with a group of people. And you never, I think as I said before, I never made any friends on the squadron, never very close. I don't know why, probably we felt that there's no use getting too close, they were going off like flies. I think I read a book by Sutherland Brown who said that our losses were equal to Bomber Command's losses in a book called Silently Into the Midst of Things by Ethel Sutherland Brown. He was on the squadron, and I didn't know him much at all on the squadron. He was just another member of the squadron. But since, we've become very close friends since the years have gone by.
Was there ever a time that you sort of sat back and thought, I might not actually get home?
Oh, yes. I lost an engine once, and I was a bit worried about it, but I didn't think I'd make it. Because several people had lost engines and been unable to maintain height, which was not good. And I remember on one occasion we'd been briefed to go from the western part of Burma down the railway line, Tonggu to someplace. And I received a lot of ack, and the engine lost a lot of fuel, a lot of oil, and later the navigator reported that it was on fire, and so I had to use the fire extinguisher. He was looking directly at it. I couldn't see it particularly. The flames are going back. So it was feathered, fire extinguisher on. And then I had to fly quite a way, about 400 miles on one engine, to a place called Michener. Now, we landed at Michener. I don't know the exact date, but it was on the 4th of September, I think. 3rd of September, 1944. And Michener had only just been captured. The town was still held by the Japanese, and the airport had been captured by the Americans, the little sort of enclave. And I landed there, because on one engine, I couldn't get over the hills, which are 10,000 feet. And the weather down to the south was atrocious. And I didn't think I was going to get back that, and I was very relieved when I landed at Michener. And I was very churned up, so churned up, I remember I had a meal with the Americans, they were very lavish with their food, very rich food, and I think I was so churned up, I was violently ill. I didn't tell anyone. You could see that I must have been churned up quite a bit. Anyhow, the next day, my number two had followed me into Michener, and so the next day we couldn't get any fuel to refuel because we were running low. All fuel had to be flown in, and so he took me as a passenger, and we were supposed to head for Imphal. Now, Imphal, they just pushed the Japanese back. This was after the Japanese were on the retreat, so Imphal was quite safe to land, but the weather was so bad. This fellow Taylor, the pilot, he decided to go to Chittagong. Because he couldn't flounder around there in the rain, short of fuel, and not be able to get into Imphal because of razorback mountains everywhere. So he headed off for Chittagong, and the fuel cut out. The fuel, one engine stopped. And I was standing behind Taylor, and I can remember changing over the wheel, changing over the fuel tanks, which is in the form of a wheel. You turned a wheel, and it would pick up again. And then I was doing this for probably about 5 minutes. It stop and start and stop, both engines, until we both engines stopped, and we had these razorback mountains underneath us, and we weren't too happy. And we're all very nervous. And I remember looking around at Dick. He was in the well of the bowfighter as well. And he was never a religious man. But there was old Dick crossing himself. He thought he was on his way too.
What about you?
Well, I was so busy turning these fuel tanks over, I didn't have time to. It's best when you're doing something, I think. Anyhow, we crash landed on the airport. And killed a lot of natives who are fixing up the runway. Dreadful. Anyhow, that was the end of my operations. I did 39 trips, but that was my last